This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. For many of us, the holidays are a time when we get to share our love for others through the pages of books. That includes for some of the youngest in our families. Christmas is an especially fun time to pick out picture books or remember our favorite early readers. And there are several treasured children's book authors Michigan lays claim to, well known for their classics. You might not realize that another award-winning children's book author has been disguising himself as Clark Kent every day while fighting for children's literacy and imagination in a less public-facing space. Devin Scillian is the nightly news anchor at WDIV in Detroit. He is also the author of several books in a series of memoirs for children, including his best-selling Memoirs of a Goldfish and this year's Memoirs of a Tortoise. And he joins us now. Devin Scillian, welcome to Stateside.
I have been told before that I bear some resemblance to Clark Kent. That's hilarious.
It's that lantern jaw, I think.
It must be. It.
Devin, when did you know that you wanted to do this kind of writing?
Before I knew that I wanted to be a journalist, to be honest. My favorite school assignment, I think, of my entire life, I was in high school, and an English teacher assigned us to write a children's story. And I just loved it and found it so engaging, and so much so that when I got to college, I studied some children's literature and children's writing. And I think it connected me back to the books that meant so much to me when I was young, and that to this very day are still like these brothers and sisters that I carry around in my mind and memory. And so for a long, long time, I just dreamed of wanting to get one book published. I wrote my first story that ended up getting published about the year that Corey and I had our first child, when Griffin was born. And I thought that I had something pretty special in hand. It took 10 years, though, to get it published. And it was just one of the most thrilling things that ever happened. I had no idea at the time that there were 20 more books to come. But for a long, long time, April, I've known that that was something that I really, really passionately wanted to do.
You know, if people were surprised by the fact that you had this skill set, it actually wasn't that much of a shock to me, because anybody who's done news writing knows that the number one, one of the number one things that you have to be able to master is brevity and economy and bringing things across in a very vivid way very quickly. I mean, that's definitely something you also have to do with a children's book, right?
It's exactly right. I cannot remember exactly how many words Where the Wild Things Are is, but it's less than 300 words. It is insanely efficient and economical. And yes, that brevity is important. I still struggle with it all the time. Everything I write, when I look at the word count, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This is too long by twice, you know, by double. But you're exactly right. The other thing I think that's duplicative is not just the brevity and being economical with words, but it's about storytelling. That's really good journalists not only impart information, but I think they tell stories. And so in that sense, these are more closely related fascinations and occupations than might meet the eye.
I think the first few pages of Memoirs of a Goldfish really bring this across. Our protagonist here, the goldfish, could you sort of read us through the first 5 days of your narrative with him?
Sure. Day one, I swam around my bowl.
I'll narrate the illustrations. We have a very sweet-looking little goldfish in a very simple bowl that just has some pebbles in it.
Day two, I swam around my bowl. Twice.
He seems very pleased with himself.
Day three. I swam around my bowl. I thought about taking a nap, but fish don't sleep. So I swam around my bowl.
And there's just the slightest hint of uncertainty on his little fishy face right now that, you know, wondering, is there more to life than this?
Day four. I got some company today. I don't like the looks of him one bit. He doesn't say anything. He just bubbles.
Enter the little plastic diver decoration that we've seen in so many fish tanks. And our goldfish friend giving this dude a whole lot of side eye.
You're doing this very well, by the way, April. Very nice. Day 5. Mr. Bubbles still hasn't said a word. He just looks at me. I said, hello today. And he said, rrr. He's creepy.
So, Devin, through the gifts of your longtime illustrator, Tim Bowers, and again, this incredibly economical copy that you've written, we get chapters of the solitary life of a standard household pet and his extreme difficulty in dealing with change and unknown elements that are entering his fishbowl. I don't want to ruin the surprise for those who haven't seen the book yet, but I just wanted to ask a little bit about how the idea for this and how any of us adapt to change, how this came to you.
You know, so many of my books, oddly enough, have started with a title. Once I get the right title in mind, for some reason, it seems to rev my imagination motor. And one day when one of my kids, my daughter Christian, came home from school, she looked at me and she said, Dad, I think there needs to be a book called Memoirs of a Goldfish. It came out of nowhere. And I just thought it was the greatest title that I'd ever heard. Memoirs of a Geisha had been out, you know, a few years prior, which we've had in the house. And my wife really liked that book, my wife, Corey. And when she gave me that title, then we all as a family kind of stood around the kitchen that night talking about the goldfish that we'd had before, a little fellow named Steve, who, I think everybody who's ever had a fish thinks the exact same thing. What in the world do they do all day? What is their reality? And once Christian gave me the title, the story came together very, very quickly. It was just a matter of days before I had it in my head, and then a little bit of tinkering over some time to get the words just right. But it just sort of all came together and in a really strangely satisfying way. And then Tim came along, and it was the first time that Tim and I had worked together, and I thought his illustrations were just magical. It was one of those things where I really thought that the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. And it was just kind of thrilling the way this one came together.
Your illustrator, Tim Bowers, he lives in Ohio and had a long career doing work for Hallmark, including their shoebox greetings. What do you like about his art style?
You know, Tim is extraordinarily gifted with creating emotion. In fact, you're talking about the side eye in the fish. I mean, who can create side eye in a fish? Well, Tim can. And one of the things that I learned really early on of working with Tim is when I'm writing, I need to leave Tim some space. I need to trust that I don't have to tell every part of the story, because Tim is going to take over and let his pictures tell a lot of the story too. And so it has been partnering with him, as we have now on a number of books, it's been just a real joy, because he's just so gifted at adding and not just duplicating what I'm saying, but finding ways to create more of the story than I even had.
Could you talk a little bit about how you and Tim collaborate with each other? Is it a question of you send him the copy and he sends you back some ideas, or do you talk things over at first and sometimes he feeds ideas back to you?
It's funny. I've worked with quite a few illustrators now, with the 21 books, I guess, with one that's being worked on right now. So they've all got sort of their own way of doing things. The guy named Mark Brought, who was the illustrator of a book of mine called Cosmos Moon, wanted to talk out every page with me, and it was really fun. And that was one kind of collaboration. Tim is the complete opposite. Tim gets the manuscript, and I really don't hear from him until he has basically a mock-up of the entire book, and all done in sketch form, so nothing's final yet. But I don't think I've ever asked for a change of any kind. Tim and I just kind of, I think we get each other. We've sort of got the same odd sense of humor, and it's a really interesting collaboration. But I kind of, and not that I'm comparing Tim and I to Elton John and Bernie Taupin, that would not be nice. But you know, the way that I've always heard the way that those guys work together is that Bernie would write all the lyrics and send them off to Elton, and he would put them to music. And that was, you know, just kind of, they both had sort of, they separated their church and state a little bit. And I think that's how Tim and I seem to work as well.
I imagine that while you spend your days at your regular job and spend a lot of your spare time working on this book, that there are moments when you find yourself in a bookstore, maybe in pre-pandemic times, and you get a chance to look around a little bit and see what new titles are out there. What is it you think about children's books that are still capturing adults' attention?
No, it's a... There's just something magical, in fact, about books in general that we really can't quite duplicate in other media. If we all say, "Gosh, I love this movie or this TV show," chances are we're all experiencing sort of the same show. But if you have two people who come together and say, "Prince of Tides is my favorite book," they have both read the same book, but they have both seen a different book. Their imaginations have populated it with characters who look and sound a different way than anybody else's version. And so in that way, books are so much more personal. The only thing I can think of that compares it to it would be music. Because we fill in so many blanks along with the author. And so those books become really, really potent. Because we make them more potent to us, we personalize them. And I think in many ways, that's the way it is still with children's books. When I visit schools, I end up being in school libraries a lot. And I still to this day, go look for My Side of the Mountain by Jean George, which was my favorite book when I was a kid. Now, I don't wanna read it. I've practically got it memorized. I don't need to borrow it because I've got a copy here at home. I just want to touch it. I just want to know that it is still there, this book that meant so much to me. And if I close my eyes, I am right back inside that book with young Sam Gribble as he runs out into the mountains. And it looks exactly the same way to me today as it did when I first read the book, I don't know, probably 50 years ago. And that's that kind of permanence is something that is so magical to me about a book, to know that it's still there.
Devin Scillian is the nightly news anchor at WDIV in Detroit and the author of the popular memoirs series, including Memoirs of a Tortoise. Devin, thank you so much for this beautiful book and all the others, too.
April, it has been such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.